the straddle planche is an extremely hard move, gymnastic moves that comes from another sport where you get conditioned for 16 years before you start training it. And you expect to learn it in 2 years. It just doesn't work like that for most people.
Yo Gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider Podcast by Gorilla Nation. My name is Phil and today's guest is one of the most successful statics coaches in Europe right now and somebody who has a lot of knowledge, a lot of scientific knowledge, and I'm really looking forward to the interview with you, Dennis. We received a lot of interesting questions from the community, and we will now go into the questions, go into some static details, and happy that you are here.
Very happy and honored too. Thank you for having me here, Phil.
So the quality of the questions that came in are like really, really high quality, and I'm really looking forward to jump into these. But before, how are you? Is everything fine? Where are you right now?
So yeah, I'm doing well. Everything's very good. Right now I'm in Vienna where I live. I'm actually Italian, but the last 10 years because of my studies, I've been living here and I think I'll be staying here for a while.
Wow. That's cool. So 10 years you're in Vienna. I thought you spent your whole life already in Austria.
No. I'm actually from South Tyrol. So Italy, Northern Italy. Was born there, went to school there. My family is actually Italian, but my mom spoke German too. So she taught me German. And since I went to German school, then I decided to move to Vienna for my pharmacy studies. Which I completed 1 or 2 years ago. I don't even remember. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. So maybe you want to present yourself a little bit. I guess some of the people who are following the static scene might know you, might know statics, what you co-founded, but maybe you can explain more. Who are you? What do you do?
Okay. Yeah, well, my name is Dennis. I am 29 years old. As said before, I'm actually originally from Italy, live in Vienna. I have a master's degree in pharmaceutical studies. I've been doing calisthenics for almost 10 years now, so quite a while. And I've been coaching calisthenics for 4 to 5 years. In the beginning, just by giving workshops all around Germany and Austria, together with Achim Gulles mostly. Judging some competitions like World of Bar Heroes and some little ones, and then moved on to online coaching mostly. And a few years ago, I co-founded Stenix with my coach, Leo, who co-founded one of the first calisthenics gyms in Italy, actually, Calisthenics Milano. And we've been coaching a lot of clients since then from all levels. We had pro athletes that you might know, like Manuel Caruso or Alessandro Conti or Lucian Stanut, as well as intermediate and some beginners. So a bit of everything.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Like I once had the situation that I think I asked my community on Instagram about some advice of my straddle planche, I think it was, and I received a voice message from you, which was packed with so much content and with so much value, which I think I listened to the voice messages 3 or 4 times, so I had to I was able to get all the value from it and the information. So I'm just happy that today you take the time to reply to some of the questions and to go into detail about statics trainings. Before, I would be interested in how did you get in touch with calisthenics, but also with statics. I wrote down why are you so in love with statics, and tell us the last story. How did it begin?
So it started off when I was 20 years old. I've lived in Vienna for had been living in Vienna for 1 year, and I was an extremely skinny guy. Like I almost didn't exist. I was like 48 kg. Like I weighed less than 50 kg. Yeah. Super skinny. And used to game a lot and drink and party a lot. Mm-hmm. And, I lived, in a student home, and we had a little gym there. And with a friend, we made a bet and said, we were going to start training and just as a fun bet to look like models one day, something stupid like that. It wasn't really the idea behind it. But so we started training and I didn't like moving weights from A to B. I wanted to do something with my body. I did a lot of sport when I was a kid. I liked climbing. I always was on the move and did lots of different sports. Was always quite good at them too. And I wanted to do something with my body. And I looked online and found calisthenics. Like I saw Barr Brothers, Hannibal for King, Frank Medrano, those classics from 10 years ago. And I said, dude, I want to do that. So I started doing push-ups, dips, everything in my student home, and stayed away from the weights because I was scared of them. And then I found out that in Italy, the scene was actually pretty big already back then, even 10 years ago. And there were some good tutorials online, good for those standards back then. And well, I started looking at those, trying out a few things and just started training statics, always on my own. And in Austria, the sport was like non-existent back then. And I started going to the parks to train sometimes, met some people like Achim, I think in the second year of training. And he was one of the first in Austria to do this too. And we started training together sometimes. And just so started out like that. It was this slow process. And I always liked statics. I liked that if you build up the strength, you can hold something which you couldn't do before. And I was always like a scaredy cat. And so dynamics didn't really interest me. You didn't even really have a possibility to train them here because back then there weren't many parks. The scene always only evolved time after. And I always trained at home in my own room, so I couldn't do flips and jumps and things like that. Even though I always found them pretty cool, I found more love for the statics and the progress you have to put in there, the methodology that you need to get better in strength training in general. But that's something that evolved with time then. Yeah.
Yeah, because you and Achim, it's also like some kind of, I don't know, love story, like you two. He's also not the dynamics guy. You two are like really strong in statics, but also in weights, like in weighted calisthenics. So this was always impressive to see you at the FIBO, etc., doing your combos. And one question that people always have is for how long did you only train basics? Because I guess you didn't start with your, straddle planche or tuck planche even.
For almost 2 years, since I was so skinny. And since the first videos I watched were the Barr Brothers back then, I knew that a lot of basics are very important. And I think that's something that was like intuitive back then, because you saw these people and they just were big and had these huge muscles and were training a lot of basics, that I really invested a lot of time in that before I even thought about skills. Now that there's the tendency that the first thing you see is people doing skills and the first thing you want to do is skills. And so for almost a year, I actually built up some muscle before I started doing these movements. And I gained over 10 kg in the first 2 years before even thinking about front lever planche, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
But you also changed your nutrition drastically, I guess.
I did. I started eating a lot. Actually, before I got into programming and everything, in that sense, my main interest was nutrition before, since with my pharmaceutical studies, I had some lectures there and I just found them interesting. And first of all, took care of that, learned everything about that, went through a few phases where I got to know a few extremes and you like understood what's wrong and what's not for me too. I think everyone in the fitness industry goes through a phase where they do something stupid, especially in nutrition wise and then training wise too. And then you just find the right way to get out and find a good balance that works for you. Yeah.
Because I'm always interested in this transformation from a skinny guy to somebody who is muscular, mm-hmm. where it's like, you can show the arms. So No, but like I'm always interested in this. How did this transformation go? Like, what are your learnings now? If I ask you as a skinny guy, Dennis, how do I gain like weight? What would be your learnings from back then?
From back then, I mean, the general idea is I thought I was eating a lot. I needed to eat much more. That's point one. Many people think they eat a lot, but often, especially if you're skinny, you probably move a lot. You move a lot without noticing. Like, for example, when I talk, I use my hands a lot, and that's might is because I'm Italian, but just generally, I'm always on the move, and therefore you need more. And tracking to get to know and understand what you're eating, just to like take a day, eat whatever you want, like how you usually eat. And at the end of the day, you sit down and you maybe weigh the things before you eat them, but you just use the portion that you usually do. You put them into an app. So you get an idea how many macros you eat of this, how many macros you eat of that, et cetera, et cetera. You follow some standard rules, 5 times a day you eat veggies and fruit, drink enough water, have enough protein, et cetera, et cetera. See if what you eat kind of falls into those standards, and then you will see that you probably don't eat as much as you think, and then you can upper that by 200 calories, knowing, kind of getting a feeling how many 200 calories are, and then adding up other 200 if it doesn't work, and just give yourself and your body time to adapt and slowly push through it. But it wasn't easy, especially when I started. Like, I remember, of course, I didn't do it the right way, but I went quite extreme and I just ate so much until I almost felt sick often, because I just wasn't used to eating this much. I started eating a big breakfast and that made it for me. Like, that changed a lot. I always ate a little breakfast, especially as an Italian. We don't eat a lot for breakfast, and changing that up, eating oats and consuming like 800 calories for breakfast, and while eating the same things during the day, makes a huge difference. So those are the tips. Stay consistent, eat healthy, but do not get into the extreme, like you only eat clean or stuff like that. Just eat normally. You need to gain weight. Eating calorie dense food will help you to gain weight. And often if I have clients that have a very, very hard time gaining weight, I tell them, dude, eat a Ben and Jerry's in the evening after dinner, and you'll see the weight is gonna go up with time.
Okay,
Ben and Jerry's and Pringles is the solution for everything.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the cheat code. If nothing helps, this is like you as a coach, you say that this is okay to do it.
Absolutely.
Like,
I mean, calorie is calorie. If you're too skinny, like you need to get them in. And if you eat only food that isn't calorie dense, you need to eat a lot of it. And just your stomach isn't that big and not used to expand that much, and you don't want that to happen either. So yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. Cool. So from your first basics workout, from starting to work out, becoming a model, to
which never first happened
yet, to the first straddle planche, how much time was between these two events?
Okay, so time frame's always the thing with calisthenics. Like, everyone wants to know how long it takes here and there. I can say, like, if I take myself as an example, I was always extremely gifted in pulling. Like, I managed to learn a one-arm pull-up in almost no time. It always was a natural movement for me. I could do 7 to 10 in a very short time, which is extremely rare in the scene generally. Like, someone who does 10 quite beautiful one-arm pull-ups isn't, you don't find him often. And it's not something many people can reach. And that was just because I had good genetics. And I was little, I have good muscle attachments. And I just always liked climbing trees when I was a kid. And those things change a lot over the time. Like, change a lot on how quickly you can learn something. The planche, straight arm movements were never my thing. So I always had a hard time Even though like that the planche got me famous in Austria because I was probably the first person to achieve it here. It was never my thing. I just had the luck that I started very early and I made many mistakes. So I think I started after my second year of training when I did a lot of basics, I started doing a tiny bit of tuck planches, planche leans, things like that, since I knew some methods from Italy and I didn't want to just go in with tries. I actually reached a straddle planche probably after 1 year after that, in my third or fourth year of training, but it was bent arm, my hips were completely piked, and it wasn't a pretty planche. I think when we met, actually, 2017, I could hold that planche for around 12 seconds or something like that. And there, I actually, at that FIBO, I actually met Leo, who co-founded Calisthenics Milano and Stenics with me later, and who was the coach of Manuel Caruso back in the time. And we talked for the whole stay there. And then I asked him to come judge the Austrian championships. And after that, I asked him to become my coach. Just I knew he knew a lot of things that I didn't, and he had a lot of experience. And he started coaching me. And only after 3 months then, because I had so much strength already, I achieved a full planche. So in total, it was almost a 5-year journey with some setbacks to really achieve it. But if I would have worked with method earlier, it would have worked way faster. And still, I always had a few problems, especially by extending my arms completely because my bicep is so short and always has the tendency to pull it, and always had a hard time with that. So that's kind of the time frame that took me to learn it. Yeah. And technique made a huge difference.
Super interesting. Like the input from a coach, the impact that he makes on your workout is like really impressive. Because it really it when you tell the story, it sounds like a cheat code. It sounds that Leo was inserted the code and bam, you got the full planche. So
I mean, it was quite crazy, and therefore I got so interested in it, and I started studying programming like a madman. I started before because I was injured. I had an impingement because I was training badly, way too much, way too often with a frequency, just by trying a lot. And I started reading about programming and then started working together with Leo. And I had already such a good base that it worked so quickly, but I was very light. My legs were inexistent and I was already quite strong. That's why it worked so quickly. And that's like an exception. It's not the rule. And I had already been training for 4 or 5, almost 5 years already, I think, at that point. So I had some time on my back. It wasn't like, bam, you get a coach, 3 months later, you fly. No, it's just not like that. And the aggressive way of coaching we had back then, we don't have anymore right now. It was way more straightforward. And now we are way slower, more careful, build it up with more time, just because we learned a lot from back then too. Like, especially with working with more and more people, you notice some trends, which you always notice after working with hundreds and hundreds of people over a long period of time and not just 3 months here and there.
Mm-hmm. So coming to your experience as a coach right now, what are the main goals that the athletes are coming to you for coaching? What are the goals?
Most of the athletes we have been actually training for quite a few years. So I think in average between 3 and 5 years, some more, some less. I like them to have trained for a while too, to have tried out things, to have already a feeling for the body, especially because it's online coaching. And if you give clues, the people need to understand them. They need to try to give objective ratings. And of course, you can learn everything over over the time by trying, but it's not so intuitive for everyone from the beginning. And usually they come because they were injured for a long time, many, many people with injuries. So we have a third person on our team too, who is a physiotherapist and really knows his stuff and those things, because you find so many injuries in the sport, sadly. And most of them want to learn handstand, handstand pushups, planche, front lever, one arm pull up, and weighted stuff. Many have this idea, which I like, of the complete athlete who can do everything, who can squat too, who can move big weights. So they want to do weighted dips, weighted pull-ups. And I remember when I started off, most of my clients, they just wanted to reach skills, and with time and how the sport shaped with time and the weighted scene growing and growing, everyone wants to become this kind of hybrid athlete that does everything. So most of them, like all the general skills from the one arm pull up to the pull up to the front lever, planche, handstand push up. Usually those are the big four or five skills they want to reach. And then you have dips, pull ups, squats, things like that next to them, or fancy things. Of course, we have some clients working on Maltese, on Iron Cross, on Victorian, things like that. But those aren't the general rule.
Interesting. What do you think is the main motivation to learn statics? Is it to impress the people, or is it to build muscle? Because we also received some
impress girls.
Yeah, but like, honestly, what do you think is the or do you see any similarity between your coaches?
I think the thing I see the most is the story I always ask when I'm on the phone. The first question I ask is, like, how did you get into calisthenics, just as you did? And they tell me their story. And 9 out of 10 people tell the story that they started off in a fitness center when they were 17, 18, 20, something like that. They liked it. They did bodybuilding for a few years. They maybe saw some progress. They maybe didn't. They found it boring because it didn't give them any bigger goals. And then they found the sport where the bigger goal was achieving something with their body, doing impressive stuff like handstand pushups, holding this incredible form, the planche or the front lever, and this fascination of being able to get so strong that you can hold something that you couldn't before, just with the pure strength of your muscle, and having this control over the body is what leads people to do this. What people forget when they want to do this is how long it takes and how frustrating learning a skill is. And I think that is the second big thing that happens. Many people get discouraged with time because it, like, just to make a little step to learn the planche can take months and year or years for some people. And you always see on Instagram the people that have absolute god genetics, and they're not a lot. Like, when you scroll through Instagram, of course you see the people who are successful, but you don't see the 99% who doesn't make it to get there. And those are the people who then ask for coaching, because just by trying, they don't get better and they don't manage to achieve those things that they want to. I think the motivation is that. And then there's always the question, if they want to keep going. And that's one of the reasons why I like working with people who already have been doing it for a few years. They know how frustrating it can get, and they know how long it takes, because a coach can give you a way, can give you programming, and can help you for sure doing the right things, but he's no magician.
Okay. As I said, like, one motivation also of the people is building muscle. And one question was, are statics a good way to build muscle?
Okay. So let's say it, the straight answer is no, it's not a good idea. If you look at the spectrum and look at the studies that are out, you have eccentric movements. When you do a slow negative, that damage the muscle a lot, therefore create a lot of fatigue, make you tired, but they create the most damage, meaning the most damage, it gets built the most. A concentric movement is quite quite effective too, but not as effective. Combination of the both is always the best. And isometrics are somewhere in between. The thing with isometrics, and when we're talking about skills, static skills, we are holding an isometric movement. So the muscle is under tension, but it doesn't go through the motions. Lay somewhere in between. And the thing is, the hypertrophy or the range where you put in the strength is about 30 degrees in there. So you will, like if you hold a planche, the shoulder will work a lot, but just to a certain range. Of course, if you do a side raise, the range will be bigger. You go from this position down here up to here where it's completely shortened and here where it's not shortened. And doing that is more effective and more safe to build muscle. So first of all, statics can build muscle, of course. It's tension. The muscle doesn't care if you have a weight in your hand or if you're doing a planche or not. But the most effective way to build muscle is in other rep ranges, with other intensities and through bigger ranges of motions while creating less fatigue. And those movements are usually movements that you see in bodybuilding, or like the pull-up or things like that. But isometrics, I wouldn't use isometrics to build muscle. Of course, you will find people that have built an incredible physique by doing isometrics. They probably did some basics too. They have incredible genetics for building muscle. If they would do bodybuilding, they would probably explode, be even bigger, because it just is the better way to train that specific thing. And they build it with isometrics too. I built quite some muscle by doing a lot of skills too, after having a good base in basics. But generally, I wouldn't, like if somebody says, I want to build muscle, I wouldn't advise that. If that is the only way to have fun in training, of course, I'll take that, because the most important thing is being consistent over time and having fun at it and being able to stick to it. If you don't stick to it and the training is boring for you, it won't work. But I would combine both and use skills more as a neuromuscular understanding movement part and doing the muscular part somewhere else, more than using the isometric to build muscle. It will happen for sure. You have some extreme positions in the planche. Your brachioradialis is extremely extended and you put a lot of tension under there. And when a muscle is completely lengthened, it gets damaged a lot if you put weight on it. So it will grow. That's why planches have ginormous biceps, even if they never curled in their whole life. Same for me. I had quite a good bicep, but when I started curling, my arm doubled in no time. So you see the general line is that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like when you talk, I have to think about Filippo Picci, because he's like also known for his statics. He also does weighted, but it would be interesting to know about his training. I don't know if you have any insights, but like he's really big, and I always think if he would be a bodybuilder, he would blow up.
Absolutely. I think Filippo, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not 100% sure, had a history of training. Like he started quite early with weight training and gymnastics, and he just had an incredible potential to build muscle, and skills are enough to maintain it or make it better. But he pulls crazy weights, he dips crazy weights, he does absolutely absurd volumes of training. Like if you see what he does, it's like out of this world. Like most humans would just feel like crap for the whole week after working like that and having a constant work volume that is so high. You always find people like that, but that's it. And they're not the norm. There aren't many Filippo Picci's out there.
Yeah. And that's one danger of social media, because you see a lot of Filippo Picci's out there. Like it can seem like this.
Exactly.
Yeah. OK, Okay. One thing that was interesting for me, you're always like also showing and sharing your weighted trainings. You're also pulling extreme numbers. You're dipping heavy. So, tell us more about the relation between weighted and statics for you. Why do they go together so well for you? Why do you do both? Do you think that weighted is slowing down your statics progress, or do you think it even supports each other? It would be interesting.
Okay. So the answer to that is, I think, tiny bit more complex. Generally, there are many skills that gain a lot from weighted training. Especially the main mover always is the muscle. So you can imagine the muscle as a big glass. The bigger the glass, the more water you can fill in. So the muscle is the glass, and then if you do a lot of weighted, you build up a lot of muscle, you will have a big glass. If you fill it up with water, which is high intensities, or if we train skills, very specific training towards the skill, I will be able, the bigger my glass is, the better the skills will be, until a certain extent. Of course, with skills, there's always the thing, there's specific muscles that help a lot, and there's always muscles that don't do anything for that movement. Therefore, if I hold a front lever, but I have ginormous legs, the muscles there won't help me. They will just make it harder. If I have a ginormous chest, won't help me in a front lever. If I have a ginormous lat, yes, it will help me. If my lat is completely enormous, it will probably not help me that much at the end of the day. There's a stop to that spectrum. There are skills that gain a lot out of weighted training because they're very similar from the movement pattern and extremely specific. Every client that comes to me and wants to learn the one-arm pull-up, I let them do pull-ups, weighted pull-ups. The easiest way to progress in no matter what is by working with numbers, and numbers are objective. They don't care like what you do. If the form is right and the numbers go up and you just get stronger, it's very easy to see. When you work with one-arm pull-up variations like the archer pull-up, you have so many things you can compensate to make it easier. And therefore, progressive overload is way more difficult because the person can just be cheating more and more. And it's easier to spot the cheat when they put on more weight. Therefore, working with weighted pull-ups to learn a one-arm pull-up is the best idea you can have. You can work slowly. You can work progressively over time. You can just get stronger to a certain point where you say, okay, he's moving very well. He's using his muscles well. He is pulling himself up in a very good pattern. And then you start specific work for the one-arm pull-up and you keep that volume very low just to understand the movement, understand how with one arm you can activate your scapula, pull your elbows well towards the body, et cetera, without stressing the tendons too much and other little structures that you would if you would just be doing that and already having a good base and doing most of the volume on weighted training. So there are things that gain a lot. From weighted training. There are things that do less. The dip, for example, is good to give general strength and have good strong shoulders and good strong triceps. But if you take, like many people think, that the dip is a must to learn the planche, it's not. It can be helpful, of course, but the exercise a planche gets most out of is actually the handstand push-up, because of angle specificity, and the muscles that get used in the handstand push-up are way more important for the planche. And we have many clients that when doing dips, they are not interested in dips. They don't like dips. They had bad injuries with dips in the past. There are much better exercises you can do instead of the dip. You can work more on handstand pushups. You can work more on pushups. Stay safe, build up muscle anyway, and do the specific work on the planche. I think for me, it's always been about changing things up. When you've been training for 10 years, things get repetitive. Like training, especially when you work with plants, it gets repetitive. You do the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I've reached what I wanted in skills. I did get injured a few times over my career, and I just wanted to change things up and do something a bit different. I wanted to be better in things where I wasn't good at, just as a challenge for myself and to keep myself interested into the sport. So really went the weighted way. I started training legs. I wanted to get my one RM up. I wanted, since I always sucked in dips, I never liked doing dips, I wanted to get better in that. And so I just kept my skills very, very like on the side, just maintained them a tiny bit, put on other 10 kg, especially on my legs. Lost a lot of skills that way because I just wasn't motivated to put enough effort in them to really maintain them, just doing them kind of and then stopping doing them because I had other interests and I just wanted to do something else for a bit of time. And now I'm, for example, cutting, training mostly in a bodybuilding style and regaining some of the skills that I lost over that time, which happens very quickly after you've learned them once, which is super nice too at the same time. So for me, it's always been a bit, before I was, I saw myself and I identified myself as an athlete mostly. So I had this pressure to be better, be the best, always push. And when I started coaching more and more, and especially when I saw how some people learn things extremely quickly because they're just good at it naturally, and some people need to struggle 2 years to understand one single activation, how like I knew that I wouldn't have a chance in certain things against other people, or like if I didn't put 20 years of work into it, then I could have made it. And just the risk of injuring myself, especially because of some things I already had or structures that are built a certain way in me, I knew I need to put that dream aside and I have other things that are fun and that I like where I'm extremely good at. Dude, I want to get my 80 kg pull up. And I went and I got it, you know, things like that. It just, I identified myself more as a coach, which put off a lot of weight as me of an athlete. And I saw training less stressful and more as a fun thing to get my mind off things, how it used to be in the beginning, especially because the few last years were extremely stressful between finishing university and building up the business and stuff like that. So it's always depends on shifting goals and everyone, like I'm always of the idea, anyone can do whatever they want and what they like. But what I like at the same time is sticking to it. Like if I take a decision, I do it for 1 or 2 years. So I really get the most out of it. If I change every month, I won't get anywhere.
That's true. So focus is like really important, especially with all the static moves. Like if we come back to the topic of statics, with all the static moves you could learn, there are like, I don't know, 20 to 50 things that are really attractive and that I would like to do. But how many skills at the same time in your experience make sense to train for? Is it one or is it three or what is it?
I would say most of our clients work on 6 to 8 skills or things at the same time in average, which doesn't mean that there's weird fancy stuff in there, like but you have the pull up, you have the dip and the squat, the muscle up, and then you learn planche, front lever, and one on pull up. Depending, like if you do pull-ups, you're already trained for the one-arm pull-up, honestly. And if you're a bit more advanced, you will have some technical work in it. And if you're extremely advanced, you will have direct work on it and maybe less on weighted pull-ups. But I think that most people, they think they can do only one thing or two things at the same time. If you program it smart, if you think about it more in a way of what muscles are used for this and that, and just do a tiny bit of technical work, which is more than enough. Usually many, like everyone does way too much most of the time. Often you just need to learn certain activations, certain movements, do the work in a safe manner. You stay free from injuries, you get stronger and you learn the things, maybe slower, but in a more safe way. And then you're able to work at 4 to 6 things, even 10 things at the same time, no problem. Of course, after a certain point, progress will be slower, especially if you take legs into account. It's just part of it. Will take a tiny bit longer. It's physics, and it's fatiguing. But if you do it smart, you have phases where you concentrate on one thing and then the other, you can do everything. I wouldn't exaggerate it. I think like over 8, it becomes kind of difficult throwing things together, regeneration wise, and just time wise. Yeah.
Interesting. Something that I see a lot, and also 2 or 3 people asked in the Instagram question box, was that they are stuck with a straddle planche, for example, at 2 to 3 seconds, something between 1 and 3 seconds, I would say. Mm-hmm. And how can they now make the static hold longer? So do they practice the tuck planche and go to there and maximize the hold there? Or what is the next step if you're stuck at 1 to 3 seconds of your static hold?
Okay. So I will take into account that the static hold they have, the 2 to 3 seconds they have, they're extremely clean. That they have all the activations in the right places. Otherwise, it's take 3 steps back and start from the beginning kind of story, who nobody wants to hear. So they hold the straddle planche for 2 to 3 seconds. Let's say when somebody has 2 to 3 seconds in training, it would be nice before they really start integrating it, that they actually, if they directly want to train that movement, have 5 seconds of hold in that movement, so that you work with a certain buffer, that you have this 3 seconds in reserve, that you can really focus on the movement and that you can get better and you have a margin. It's like bench pressing 100 kg. When 100 kg is your max and you every training you go in, you bench press 100 kg. Everyone, even if you don't have a lot of experience in training, would think, okay, maybe it's better I do 90 for 3 reps, and then I do 92.5 for 3 reps the next week, et cetera, and get better. And then I probably won't be benching 100 for a while, but the next time I try, I will bench 110. Same principle, just very simplified. So they probably can hold it 5 seconds, meaning they can do a few sets of direct work. 2 to 3, maybe 4 sets of direct work. What they can do, if it's extremely solid, they can add set week by week. Meaning if the second week you hold for 3 seconds, the third week, if they're extremely solid in it, probably have already 7 to 8 seconds of hold. The next week they can do 4 sets with 3 seconds, then 5 sets of 3 seconds, 6 sets of 3 seconds, then 7 or 8, then deload, and then start off maybe with 1 second more and 3 sets again. Just super linear, super easy. If they have a talent in it, usually it doesn't work this beautifully and nice and linear. The second thing they can do is, as a back off, having the progression before, meaning you have a quite easy back off, like you have your 4 times 3 seconds straddle planche, and as the next exercise, you use the advanced tuck planche to gather volume, and you maybe just have 2 sets where you hold until 3 seconds, you have 3 seconds in reserve somewhere there. So a quality hold where you don't go all out, and you hold about 10 to 12 seconds, meaning you have enough specific work to maintain the skill, to get better at the same time without making yourself too tired, without throwing yourself out the window by trying and trying and trying straddle planches, without having a risk of injuring yourself, putting yourself constantly in a position that you can't really hold for a long time. And we have extreme strain on certain structures. And then if your 3 seconds, you can't get better in the straddle planche, it always stays there. You will work on improving the volume on the advanced tuck planche. And the third thing, which is the most fancy thing, if you really see that you have a certain thing that isn't right in your movement, that you need a certain activation that is missing, you can add assistance work for that. For example, you have problems to depress the scapula in the right way, or maybe you exaggerate it and you need to find a nice position where you work well. Usually I like to do this work directly just by giving feedbacks. But if somebody really has a very hard time, you can put some extra work. But this is very fancy and needs to happen after months and months that you see that it doesn't work and the person doesn't have the right activations and need isolated work for it. And maybe he's really missing some muscle, and then we need to take our time to build up stronger shoulders, come back after 6 months of really building up stronger shoulders, but still maintaining the movement, and then going at it again. So these are the ways to get better. And a lot of patients, never forget that straddle planche is an extremely hard move, that it's wall level gymnastic moves that comes from another sport where you get conditioned for 16 years before you start training it, or 12 to 16 years before you start training it, and you expect to learn it in 2 years. It just doesn't work like that for most people.
Wow. That's really important because, I always say it in every podcast episode, but it's really important for me because I really feel that this is the difficulty with social media, that you tend to have the impression that everybody learns straddle planche, especially in Italy, where everybody's born with a straddle planche.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's important that you say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. High frequency, low volume versus low frequency, high volume. Specific question, but there are like different training approaches, and somebody was asking about your opinion on like the volume and frequency and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll start off with high frequency. Generally, for a long time, especially in Germany, I think there has been this this idea of greasing the groove and trying like going into the front lever every day, I don't know how many times, extremely high frequency. The idea behind it that is that you do it in extremely low intensity so you don't get hurt. That's what most people forget, and they just throw themselves into a full front lever even if they can't hold an advanced tuck. But that's another story. So there's a big idea, the more you do it, the better it is. Like, well, the more I do it, the better it is. From experience, I can tell that most people can get better in a safe manner when they train. Let's take the planche, because everyone wants to learn the planche twice a week. Just twice a week. You do other work on the shoulders, maybe in total three times a week on that day, and maybe on another day, something else. In calisthenics, since many movements are full body movements, you will have some of the muscles here and there always. But rarely people gain something from doing it three times a week or four times a week. If you have an extremely advanced athlete, if you work with extremely low intensity, you can do it more often. But as a standard rule, start two times, and if you tried everything else out, you can play around with frequency. But frequency is not something I like to play around with a lot, because it's very, very risky. It's very easy to throw somebody completely off by doing it once more a week. And usually it's enough. And then we can talk about volume as a second thing. So generally, in periodization, and nothing changes for calisthenics. Calisthenics is a strength sport. Many people think it's this special snowflake that doesn't apply, where no rule applies, that applies in every other sport in the world. And generally, the standard rule of periodization is you start with a higher volume, which makes absolutely sense. Especially if you work on scales. I can give some numbers as an example, because that's what I always wanted to hear, or I used to. So we take somebody can hold a tuck planche for, let's say, 7 to 8 seconds, but the activations aren't great. So what do I do now? His biggest problems isn't the whole time. He can, he's already quite strong because 8 second stock lunge is quite good, but he doesn't understand how to get into the movement. Here, working with very high volume is a great idea. He can do 10 sets, which sounds crazy, but you can do 10 sets of 2 seconds, meaning the first 5 to 6 sets probably have 5 seconds in reserve. They're super easy for him. And then only it starts to really train and drain the muscle. But before, he can only focus on his activations. And working with high volumes like that, generally, in the beginning, even like if you do pull-ups, you maybe start out with 6 reps on one day, 4 reps on the other day. And the months to come, you go down with the reps, you go up with the weight, and you go up with the intensity. With the skills, you kind of do the same thing, just way more soft. Like, it's not as abrupt because everyone, the progress in skills is way less linear because many people need to understand activations before they can get better in the movement. And that can take a while, and they need to stick to more sets for a longer time to understand the movement faster. And generally, if you take the example that I said before, you maybe start with 10, 8 sets, let's say, you work up to 10 to 12 sets at the end of the cycle, you see at the end, hey, he has understood the activations, easy peasy, everything's easy. You can probably put on 1 second to every set and he has no problem doing that. The next month, you can start with less sets, more seconds, or even if everything's going extremely well, test out the tuck planche, see how he holds it. Maybe he has already understood the activations for the advanced tuck planche and start with that with a normal volume, which is 4 sets twice a week, 8 sets in total, where you put up the sets over the weeks and you end up with somewhere between 16 and 20 sets at the end of the month. So I wouldn't use a high volume method or a low intensity, low volume, high intensity method, but I would do it so, just as the metaphor that I used before, big glass, lots of volume, and then you start filling up this glass with high intensity, but the volume gets lower because if you do 10 sets of 10 seconds where you can only hold 10 seconds for one time, you're just gonna hurt yourself. But you will end up with 3 sets of 3 seconds of advanced tuck planche at the end of that. So it's a continuum. And then you just keep replaying this wave, kind of.
Mm-hmm. And did you say something about the rest between the sets? Because this was also a common question. How much rest should I make between static sets?
Mm-hmm. Depends a lot on the intensity of the set. Generally, I give a standard rest time of 2 minutes plus. So after 2 minutes, you can go and see how you feel and go again. There are methods, for example, when we work with 10 sets and the person just needs to understand the technique, but is very good at it, where we keep the rest times lower, 30 seconds, 1 minute, because the repetition is important, like keep going in, understanding it. But generally, most of the moves we do, they go in a max strength range, if you want to call it like that, which in powerlifting, or usually say 1 to 3 or 1 to 5 reps, whatever. So rest times should be kept quite long, 2 to 3 minutes. Just so you feel fresh and you go in again. There are months and methods where you can be more fancy, when you can play around, where you can shorten your rest times to accumulate more volume, to put more stress on it, to keep repeating the movement, and then end up in months where you have longer rest times, less sets, and higher intensities by having a harder progression.
Yeah. Cool. As you already said, everybody wants to learn the planche, and front lever is a little bit the smaller brother, I would say. Question was how to combine front lever and planche, because the moves are somehow different, but yeah, maybe they have some similarities. But what's your experience in someone learning, wanting to learn these two skills?
I feel like planche and front lever they go well hand in hand. You have one that is more push heavy, the planche, and one that's more pull heavy, which is the front lever. In both, the thing that connects them both is you have to understand how to use your shoulder blades, the whole scapula movement. So a lot of work for the scapula will be needed in one direction for the front lever, in the other direction for the planche. Beautiful. You have everything there. You can use pull movements to strengthen up the front lever, just like the pull up, or if you want to be more specific, something like the bent over row. And you can use push movements, like especially the handstand push-up, maybe push-ups, to strengthen up the planche and put direct work in. So you can do one pull day, one push day, divide them. I generally like to put them together. It's just more fun, makes the training more fun and more various. You can superset them on certain months if you're quite advanced. I like to keep them one after another for most people. So they have planche, 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 and can correct their mistakes between one set and the other in an easier way. Later on, if they already know the activations, it has even some advantages to mix them up, have planche, front lever, planche, front lever, planche, front lever. If you already know what you're doing, for some people, using the antagonist muscle creates a better performance between sets. There have been studies, but generally you can combine them extremely well in this way. So there's no big problem to train both. And I never had the feeling that one made the other one tired or anything like that, or I got a better performance out of the other one because I wasn't doing one of the two. Cool. Yeah. So no big interference there.
Okay. That's good. Last question, like really specific on training. No, it's not the last question, but it's an important one. Leg training. Is it a disadvantage? Like, what is your personal motivation to train legs? Because I know that you are squatting heavily. Like, what is your motivation, and what would you advise someone who is asking, yeah, should I train legs? Does it slow down my skill performance, mm-hmm. etc.?
Okay, so when people tell me they want to train legs in the first call, I always tell them the probability that learning skills when training legs will take longer is very high. It always depends on genetics, as always. But if you look from a physical standpoint of view, the more weight you put on the lower body, the front lever and the planche, mostly if you take these two exercises, they're levers. And the more you put on one side, the harder it is to balance it out. So people that run around and say, yeah, I train legs and I can hold the front lever, and that not training leg is just an excuse, they have not understood physics at all. If they wouldn't be training legs, their front lever would be for sure be 5 to 10 seconds longer. That's it. Like, there is no discussion about that. In addition to that, a fact comes into play that leg training usually, especially if you squat, is extremely taxing on neuromuscular, like on a sit and ask level. It makes you tired. Like after a squat session, you feel like shit. And especially if it was heavy, and even the day after, you feel lethargic. And even if you do skills the day after, some people have, like I had problems activating just because I wasn't as fresh as I used to be. That is one other thing. A tiny bit of leg training can help to understand activations, but it's more activation training than going heavy and building muscle. Is it possible to do both? Absolutely. Like, I'm not saying that it's not possible, but it's something you have to take into account. And like in everything, it's different for everyone. One person maybe can squat super heavy. They do not put that much muscle on their legs while doing so. They have an extremely high muscle density. They don't look like much, but they can squat extreme weights. That's just how their muscle fibers are made. They will be able to squat extremely heavy and have no change in how they progress in front lever. Just that the frequency of training, like they might be are a tiny bit more tired, but other people, they can recover extremely quickly, even if they squat heavy. So I can never tell if a person will be able to do this, yes or no. What I can tell that probably with some less weight on their legs, the hold will be longer. And people who manage to hold very long holds and have trained legs, like I can take myself, for example, I put on 10 kg and yes, I trained way less skills, but my front lever went from, I don't know, 25, almost 30 seconds to 3 seconds or something like that. Like it completely went downhill. And my back though, like I managed to pull more weight. At the end of the day, I was pulling more weight. My 1RM was higher. I was pulling my legs too when I was pulling up. So my back got stronger generally, but I didn't do a lot of specific training. So I wouldn't count it as a well-done case study. If I've done more and I wouldn't have put on the weight so quickly without training skills at all almost, it would have been a completely different story. And it comes back very, very quickly after that. But it does make a huge difference. And I'm somebody who tends to put on muscle very quickly. Like even if I stay quite light at the end of the day, there just comes flesh there and that flesh is heavy and it doesn't help me to hold my front lever. Some like for the planche, for example, having like heavier legs, I just couldn't feel them anymore and not activate my hips like I used to. Like it was an absolute catastrophe. And for some people, it will not be like that. And they will be able to do it anyway, or they just get so much stronger over time. They dip so much more and they move so much more weight, or they pull up so much more that generally they get stronger anyway, and they put on more muscle and they can equalize it that way. But yeah, the response is it will take longer. There are smart ways to do it. Like you work for 6-8 months on a certain thing, you maintain a skill, then you cut, you get off all the excessive fat, you maintain the leg training with low intensities, but still high numbers. And you work on improving the skills again, and then you rerun the cycle. But as you can see, this is something you have to think in years, not in months. And it's quite a lot of work.
Super interesting. I definitely appreciate like you definitely showing up the risks of leg training, I would just mm-hmm. call them, or the downside, but still showing the way how it's possible, because yeah, leg training gives advantages to the health, to long-term things.
Yeah, absolutely. Aesthetics. It depends on the goal. Yeah. And some people just want to learn the planche, and then I'll tell them that if you just want to learn the planche, just learn the planche. If that's your goal, don't let social media or other people pressure you into doing something where you don't have fun and you make your life harder. Like if you like challenges, okay, do it. But already be someone with decent genetics for planche if you really think about doing that, because otherwise you can forget that move altogether. Yeah.
Awesome. Two more personal questions. What are your current goals that you are working on right now?
Okay. Sport-wise. At the moment, I'm actually in some kind of transit phase. I work towards 1RMs for a long time. And put skills a bit aside, which was fun, but kind of burned me out towards the end. I was very happy with where I got and the numbers I pulled and dipped, and quite happy with those. With the squat, I had a little issue with my obliques, so I stopped for a long time and put it on the side again. Now I'm mostly training bodybuilding style and really changing up the training, just going more for a muscular feel. I never trained bodybuilding wise. Many people did in the beginning. and I'm regaining a lot of skills very quickly. I'm cutting, getting more in my comfort zone of weight, where I used to be, or where I feel just better and lighter, and want to regain a lot of skills at the moment. Just feel good, have fun in training, just not think about it. When you work towards numbers so long, it just drains you. Like, it's everything you think about. You go into the training, it needs to work, you need to be fresh, it needs to be a good day, et cetera, et cetera. You're at your complete limit all the time. It makes you trash tired, and at a certain point, you just don't want to see them anymore. And now I'm working with low weights. I have my ego side. I just go for feeling, and it's super fun. And I'm really, really enjoying it. So at the moment, it's that. After that, my goal, long-term goal as an athlete, is actually I want to find the perfect way, the best way to just look good, have as much muscle as possible, be as lean as possible. Of course, that will be phases. Like, it's not possible to be it all the time, and have be able to do as many skills as possible for as long as I can, and just feel good and healthy about it. So I'm trying to find a style of training that is very safe for me, that is very fun, that feels good, that allows me to grow, mostly in the body, but allows me to specialize very quickly, because I've done everything already. Meaning, if I spend a year bulking now and mostly training hypertrophy wise, maintaining some skills, I will be able, after a 3 to 6 month cut, being extremely lean, being bigger than I used to be. And in those months where I cut, specialize again, maybe I want to do a weighted competition, I have the muscle and the foundation and the technique to specialize for a weighted competitions and go and have extremely good results, better, even though if I didn't touch high weights for a year, to have a better performance there, just because very specifically I can do those movements because I know them and because I have more muscle. I want to do more skills again. I go in that direction. And this is the way of training that I like, that I see doing myself long term, and not burning out on, because it allows me to go in every direction I want, be it endurance, be it aesthetics, be it this or that. And at the same time, since I'm not scared of injuries like I used to, because before training was my life and I absolutely depended on it, and now I see myself more as a coach, I'm starting to trick. I want to start tricking, doing flips and stuff. Something I always wanted to do, I was scared of doing, and taking that on me. But less on the bar, so not freestyle. I'm not going down that route. But flips and stuff on the floor for now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, keeping it fresh.
That's cool. That's like really important. If somebody trains for 10 years, I think it can get boring. So yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely feel you.
Yeah.
We received a question about your morning routine, which is something that is also quite interesting. Do you want to tell us more?
Okay. Since I've been a student, or I was a student for a long time, and now I'm self-employed, and I always like to study in the evenings. I like to work in the evenings. I'm not someone who gets up early. I don't like it. So I don't usually. Like, if I have extremely stressful times, I do. But most of the time, I get up at around 8:30 or 9, depending on how long I worked in the evening. And the first thing I do is turn on my coffee machine, as I picked up coffee as a hobby during the lockdown. So I've always thought, like, I like having interests. I always like cooking a lot, and I always go very much into detail everything I like I completely freak out about it. And I wanted to do it about a drink. I don't drink wine or whiskey or anything like that. And I wanted to have knowledge about something else. So coffee it was. I always loved coffee, and I got myself a nice coffee machine. I buy different beans, and I like to make myself a very good, well-extracted coffee, try out different ones, and draw in latte art. And then I always have the same breakfast, kind of. So the only meal in the day that's always the same for me is my breakfast, which is oats, some berries, always different, protein powder, banana, and milk, or water if I don't have milk. And now I put it in the mixer. Before, I used to cook it, put some chocolate on it, and I like to do that. Usually that's my general morning routine. When it's warm, I sit out on the terrace I have, I stare into the sun, and I put my phone away and I just enjoy my time there. And then I usually come and sit down and start working. Often I just drink my coffee, work for 4 hours until 12 or so, or 13 o'clock. Then I have breakfast, only very, very late. And then I go training, and then I have lunch at 17 o'clock and dinner at 20. That's like the more typical training day. So everything's a bit shifted, but yeah, that's my morning routine, if you want to call it like that. It's not a typical, I wake up at 5 a.m. and I start working. No, I like to work in the evening. I like to sleep in the morning. I sleep very well there, and I like to enjoy the peace in my coffee.
Awesome. Wow, that's cool. So yeah, we're slowly coming to an end of the episode. We always have some quick questions, quick answers at the end of every mm-hmm. episode. So yeah, favorite food, with a small addition from Iris, who asked, accept pizza with pineapple.
Steak. I love the steak. I've perfectioned the art of steak, and I think that's my favorite food.
Cool. Are you a dog or a cat person?
I used to have cats. I got allergic to them while I was in Vienna. I like dog as an animal and companion more, but I like them both. I think dogs a lot of work, cats less, both are cute.
Cool.
So no right answer there.
Okay. If you would have to choose, would you choose a good buddy or cool skills?
Cool skills.
Okay. For sure. What athletes inspire you?
This is an interesting one. I think the athletes that, like, it always depended on where I wanted to go at the time. I think one of the most impressive athletes at the moment is actually Baki and Zod. I think those two, especially Baki, it's just incredible what how complete they are, how strong they are, how they keep improving after years and years and years and years of training. Just beautiful. Yeah, I would say those.
True. Yeah, like Baki, when I see like his mobility, like he's extremely, mm-hmm. extremely like with his side splits and his straddle planche, he has like legs I've never seen before. So like in so many areas, that's true. It's extremely impressive.
It's extremely difficult to be this good in this many areas. It's extremely rare. It's an absolute gem, because many people define something where they're good at. But being so well-rounded, looking the way he does and performing the way that he does is extremely rare. And like just skills-wise, there was one athlete in Italy that not many people know that I always liked much, but I forgot his name right now.
You don't know him as well.
I forgot him as well. He stopped being active along Lorenzo something. Lollo, he's called on Instagram. But he had the clean aesthetics. He was able to do dynamics, gymnastic dynamics, and just incredible. And Majeli, I always liked too. But those freaks, it's just something different. And once you learn, like see people working extremely hard to reach certain things with way more dedication than very gifted athletes do, I have more appreciation for that. I have more appreciation for the hard work people put in compared to being a genetic freak who trains very unregularly, but is so gifted that he does get better anyway. And although they have a hard time, they keep going and keep going and keep going. So, yeah.
That's true. What's your favorite skill?
The one I never really completely reached, the Maltese. Yeah.
Cool. Pull or push?
Pull.
You already said. Do you have a favorite book that you want to recommend? Because also we had one question that was asking, where do I get the knowledge about scales and biomechanics? Maybe you can recommend some books for the people who want to go deeper in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So good books about calisthenics don't exist yet. There is no book I would recommend where you can learn a lot from it. Overcoming gravity is like decent to get an idea what skills exist, but not more, and not programming wise. In Italy, there is one book or two books that are decent from Project Invictus, but they're only in Italian. One of our plans is to write a book like this in the future, where you really have the basic foundations of everything in there. The books I will recommend will be outside of the calisthenics world, and you will have to learn to apply the knowledge you learned there to the skills and find parallels, which we did. And mostly it's like the pyramids from Helms, the strength principles, hypertrophy. How is it called? Hypertrophy and Strength Principle by Mike Isretel. Some of the literature and video RTS, Reactive Training Systems, puts online. But mostly I would look into, it's called MASS, M-A-S-S. It's a website by Greg Knuckles and Eric Trexler. Those are big people in the general fitness community who do a lot of research. And what they do, not only research themselves, they take studies that come out and make reviews about them. And they have built this incredible website where you pay a monthly abonnement, and they don't only review all the studies that come out in the fitness world every month, but they have some programming basics in there too. And everything they put in there is science-based and evidence-based. And it's well made, it's beautiful, and it helps out everyone who really wants that. You need to dig into it. And it's good you have read some of those books. But if you look up Mike Isretel, and you will find some good, and Eric Helms, you will find some good books by those two people. And then you will apply what you learned there to calisthenics, and that is already a good start, and much more than 99.9% of people are doing in this sport.
Cool. Also, a quick cross shout out, I would call it, to Frink's Movement. I guess you know yeah. him, Eric, from Poland, who is like doing a really good job with podcasts as well. And he interviewed yeah. Mike Isretel. So
I know.
We will also leave the link and also to the links to your books you have to send me afterwards, please.
I will.
We can link them for the people who are interested. But as I said, like the podcast interview with Mike Isretel and Frink's Movement is really worth listening.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. Favorite music genre?
I don't really have one. I listen to a bit of everything, honestly. Usually it's something in the direction of rock. It used to be epic music when I started training, which is quite special, but a lot in the calisthenics scene listen to that. Yeah, those two probably.
Cool.
I would say
The best calisthenics event you've ever visited.
For sure the FIBO World of Bar Heroes, the last one we did, what was it, 2019?
Yeah,
before the world went to complete Yeah, and some events in Italy, but those were little ones. Like those events where you get to know so many Italian athletes. Those are just fun, just because the people are so crazy and fun. Like you meet people you would never think of. It's those events were always great. Yeah,
nice, great. The last question: what's your message to the calisthenics community? What do you want to give to the listeners? Maybe something that you want to give them as an advice.
I think it's the thing I repeated over and over again in the podcast. I think it's the thing we always try to put in our marketing. So calisthenics, like the message we always want to try to give to people is that most things you see are outliners, and you shouldn't feel bad about yourself when certain things don't work and they just take time. That you shouldn't believe into fast, quick, best way to learn something, but consistency, hard work, and working well and intelligent, like with the brain, using your head, are the best way if you want to reach certain goals. Never forget the fun. Working with a plan doesn't mean that it's not fun, but you want to reach the goals and you just take the best way to do so, which for most people is the thing they want to reach, and this is what makes them happy. And yeah, don't fall for stupid marketing. Don't fall for cookie cutter programs. Use your head, apply what you learned, and learn from it. And yeah, stay real. Like everyone always searches for shortcuts, especially in the fitness world. 10 million diets, quick 30 days, 10 days, learn this, learn that. It takes time, and it's not a bad thing that it takes time. Your body needs time. The muscle are quite quick in learning things, your ligaments aren't. And it's a journey, and you should enjoy it. Yeah. Poetic.
Awesome. Thank you. So, yeah. How can people get in touch with you? How can they learn from you? Do you have open spaces for coaching? Yeah, tell us a little bit.
So probably the most valuable information we put out there is on YouTube right now. So we have started a YouTube channel not a long time ago called Stenix, S-T-H-E-N-X. We really try to bring this message to people, showing some how you learn the right technique, and really taking some case studies of clients of ours where we follow them for like 2 years. So a long time, and show them how they progress and what we did to so that they reach certain goals. On Instagram at Stenix2. So at Stenix and then underscore. And on Instagram, you can find me under Dennis_Kalis. So these are the things where I'm mostly active. We have a podcast on Spotify called Stenix, the Stenix podcast. And I used to be in the Strengths and Skills podcast, where they have a lot, like I'm in the first 40 or 50 or 60 episodes, where you find a lot of useful information too. If you're interested in programming and training, both in English and German. And I think that's that. Yeah, coaching spots, we still have open coaching spots since we have one more coach and physiotherapist working with us. Our capacity has grown, and we can take in more people. Yeah.
Wow. That's good news. If people want to reach out to you, I guess Instagram is the best way.
Instagram is the best way. Yeah. Directly cool. On Stenix. And there you have a link tree if you want to apply to the coaching and everything. And just follow me on Instagram. Shoot me a message. On my personal channel, you won't find that much. It's more about just me drinking coffee most of the time. But on Stenix, we post very regularly every week client results, and we explain what we did with them and some informative videos. So there you can learn a lot of little things. When you already have a base, you will understand them very well.
Which is quite untypical content for Instagram, because you're not the fancy edited trap music content, but it's like more like, I would call it in a positive way, like a webinar style or like a lecture. So it's really something that is worth watching and worth checking out. And I think YouTube is also really high quality, what I saw until now. So yeah.
Thank you.
So... yeah, you're doing an awesome job. I think like the quality that you brought into this, I still remember, like, I think it was it 2019 that you told me about this project, and you had this small Instagram page where you started posting, or when was it? Like,
I think it was, 2 years ago. So we started 2019 with Stenix and just posting results. We never followed anyone. We like every social media rule that you usually follow, we didn't. We just said, like, if somebody's interested in what we do, he genuinely needs to be interested. Otherwise, he won't read our text. He won't interest himself to get better. So we never followed anyone. We never liked anything. We never comment anything. Every follower got in there because they were interested in our comment, in our content. Of course, it's not a lot, but still, I think we're quite well known, especially like in Italy, Germany, in Austria, through the podcast and stuff. Most people have heard from Stenix somewhere. Still, even if the channel isn't big, even if the numbers aren't big, people always find a way to us some way or another. So I guess it's working.
That's if you do a good job, if you have a good product, you don't need the a lot of marketing for it. You can only focus on the quality of the product. And what I can say from here, and the incredible voice message to close that loop in the beginning, that told me the things that I have to improve, like the quality will just pull people towards the coaching and you. So yeah, Dennis, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you mostly
for sharing so much, like replying to the questions from the audience is really, really nice. I think like I took a lot of things for myself as well. So that's also good. Thanks everyone. A quick thank you to you on the other end, listening to this. It's been a long episode again, 1.5 hours. Thanks a lot for staying with us till the end. We really appreciate it. If you want to support the episode, give it a thumbs up. That helps a lot. Dennis, you have the last words. Thanks again for your time. You can end the episode and say goodbye to everyone.
Okay. I want to thank you for having me here. Amazing opportunity and super cool that you had me here. I appreciate your work too. Always did. Since the beginning. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you to everyone, and have a good one.